Supergirl has a big reveal this week, plus David S. Goyer is MIA, that's at minute 25. The Perils of Felicity Smoke at minute 39. Flash plays tricks at minute 59. And Steal Yourself for a Proposal at minute 70.
And now, from the Fortress of Solitude, deep beneath the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, sci-fi4me.com presents The Rogues Gallery.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks very much for joining us for this episode of The Rogues Gallery here on Sci-Fi For Me Radio. My name is Jason Hunt. I am the editor and publisher at sci-fi4me.com. And I guess I would say the editor and publisher of our new venture, horrorforme.com, which is live and now in the crawl before we run phase of development. We're still adding to the staff over there and developing content. Sitting across from me here in the studio is my co-editor for Horror For Me and co-host of the H2O podcast, Mr. Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
Who's going to be writing recaps for The Expanse.
Yep.
Over on Sci-Fi.
Yes,
yes. So be looking forward to that. We are in our countdown to Star Wars, so we're going to be posting a bunch of stuff.
Wait, is there a new Star Wars movie?
Yeah, there's a new Star Wars
movie. I hadn't heard.
And joining us on the Ansible from around various different points of the globe, a horror filmmaker himself, developer of the web series Shadowfalls, and among other projects that he's done over the years, Mr. Kendall Sin.
Good evening, everybody.
And our Arrow recap writer and hopefully soon to be comic book reviewer, Mr. Jacob Eliashar, is here with us as well.
Hello.
And down in Fort Worth, Texas, where he has just turned in his interview with cosplayer Crystal Star. We're putting the finishing touches on that. Mr. Jeff Hackworth joins us as well.
Howdy, howdy.
And I have to start off this show.
Uh-oh.
Admitting I was wrong.
What?
But it's a qualified admission.
Sure.
It's qualified. Because, now Ken, I'm going to give Kendall a moment here to gloat, because he was right as to the identity of Hank Henshaw over on Supergirl.
Hold on a second. I need to record this on my end so that my wife can listen to it.
Now, Kendall, did you see the episode?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so we get through this whole thing. It was a wheel spinning episode as far as the gem storyline goes. You've got this telekinetic alien with a mind stone on his forehead, and he's running around inside the DEO base. And it's kind of a, you know, rat in a maze type of storyline, where nothing's happening, really, except let's chase him and let's shoot and shadows and whoosh, 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 oh, what's going on? He's after us type of thing. All set to engender distrust in Alex for Hank Henshaw.
Which already existed.
This just makes it worse. And she finally confronts him. What happened to my dad? We get the shock and awe of the episode is when Hank sits there and says, I'm not Hank Henshaw. I'm the last surviving member of my race on my planet, Mars. And he stands up and turns around, and there he is, John Jones.
Welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Now, the other part of this storyline, well, I thought was pretty good, was Kara figuring out how to deal with the fact that she'd blown out her powers. And I think the best scene of the night was when she and Jimmy were talking about it, and Jimmy's like, oh yeah, solar flare, that's what he calls it. He likes to name them. He likes to name his powers. Heat vision, freeze breath, and Kara says, he's such a nerd.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best scene in the whole episode. But we've solidly cemented the mentor-protege relationship, I think, between Kat and Supergirl in this episode, where she's, you know, Supergirl sits there and says, I heard your speech, I loved your speech, I thought it was great because it inspired me as much as it inspired anybody else. But this reveal that Hank Henshaw is John Jones was not supposed to be the original plan. According to Andrew Kreisberg, one of the producers of Supergirl, They were on set, and I think it was either during the pilot or during the first regular episode. And they're shooting a scene with Hank, and Jeff Johns is there. He, of course, the chief creative officer at DC Comics. And they were talking about David Harewood, who plays Hank Henshaw. And they were, you know, I think somebody took note of the shape of his ears. Is where the whole conversation started.
Wow.
And his voice. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know, if we were ever to do a live-action John Jones, he'd be perfect for it. And according to Kreisberg, Jeff Johns looked over at him and said, well, why not? And suddenly that door was kicked wide open that the chief creative officer at DC just told them they could change the origin of this character, change the identity of the character.
Wow.
And that tells me that originally Hank Henshaw was going to be Cyborg.
Well, but also bear in mind that because he quote-unquote died, he can always come back as...
The real Hank could be Cyborg real, still.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
Under the control of Brainiac. So my theory still holds.
Except
it's the real Hank, not John Jones Hank.
Except this was a really, Kendall this was still a right. Really,
this was a really long way for you to go just to not say, Kendall, you're totally right.
I said Kendall was right. I said Kendall was right at the beginning of the episode. I said when we started recording, I said Kendall was right.
He even sent us a text about it, saying that Kendall
float. Yes, a text to which nobody responded. Thank you very much.
Yeah, the text that you sent me, knowing full well I hadn't watched the episode.
Have you not seen it?
I did, after.
And he wasn't here last week, so.
I think, first of all, it was a really cool reveal.
It was. And I hear they have an actual physical suit. Because this particular one was CG,
right?
Because it was so fast, it was so last. I don't know if it was last minute or not, but there is actually going to be an on camera in the scene suit that he's going to wear. I don't know if they'll enhance it with CG.
Probably.
I really hope that it's better executed than Red Tornado. Because Red Tornado was just bad.
Ooh. I mean, yeah, that was the worst thing.
Worst thing that I've seen on any of the Berlanti shows so far was Red Tornado. Yeah.
Well, okay, you have to give them the fact that they can't get everything right, including Jem, Son of Saturn.
I know. Complete waste of time.
Well, and especially when you consider that in the comic, Jem is a good guy and was for many, many years. Although, interestingly enough, he was created to be a replacement character for Martian Manhunter way back in the day.
Irony.
Yeah, funny.
Well, that may be why they used him then.
Well, but it's weird because, I mean, here's a character that you could actually have be a positive alien character aside from the Martian Manhunter in this world, and yet they made him a villain for reasons? I mean, he's red and scary looking, I guess? I don't know. It's a little disappointing.
Well, and... like you said, they can't get everything right.
Well, and it's another universe, right?
You know, yeah, it's a multiverse.
So, yeah. You know, but still, it's unfortunate.
Well, one thing that I did like about it is the fact we got to see Chaz again. Charles Halford, who played Chaz on Constantine,
mm-hmm.
played Jem.
Right.
And you couldn't tell it was him.
No.
But you know, it's nice to see he's back on another comic book show. Nobody's forgotten him. Like, yeah, we'll throw you a bone.
That's just like the graveyard of the DC Cinematic Universe. You know, they're just kind of like, what can I get from here? I'm gonna go down to the pawn shop there and see what they have. You know, at the on the shelf.
The canceled DC television shelf.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, and the
Flash has been pulling from that shelf for a while.
Yeah. So has Arrow. Arrow pulled directly from that shelf. And turns out, and we can talk about this a little bit later on, Arrow's ratings for their mid-season finale, one of the top episodes for the season so far. Ratings really? For Supergirl and Gotham are both up week to week. This is a story in...
Gotham how?
Was there... Okay, there was nothing else on that night, was there?
No, there was Supergirl. There was a Supergirl.
No, I mean the same time.
Supergirl. Supergirl and Gotham are
Supergirl
on the same time.
And football.
Yeah, Monday Night Football. But Live Plus.
And The Voice.
Yeah. But
and The Voice.
Live Plus three numbers for both Gotham and Supergirl were up from their previous weeks.
So somewhere the producers of Gotham has some dirt on somebody.
Something. Something's going on.
Because.
Well, the only thing.
I have a feeling it's something my kids are doing.
The only thing that I can. The only thing that I can think of one why. Why Gotham would be up would be because it was the mid-season finale.
Mm, yeah.
It was the last episode that we're going to get until whenever. And Supergirl, we've got one more. And so, you know, everybody's looking at Gotham to see what they managed to pull out. And then now we've got... I expect Supergirl's numbers for mid-season finale to be up even from last week. Because there's nothing else on but Monday Night Football.
Yeah. It's counter-programming.
Yeah.
Do we have a breakdown? Do you know if we have a breakdown of any of that? Like, as far as demographics?
I don't have it in front of me, but I know from, with you know, 18 to 49 adults is the big demo that everybody wants to go for.
It's doing great in that.
It's pulling in some good numbers.
I'm curious if this is bringing in the female audience.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm guessing that, and this is a complete guess on my part. I'm going to have to dig into it and see if we can do some research on it. I would guess that your comic book audience, your comic book movie audience is going to be split between the two shows, between Gotham and Supergirl. You're going to have predominantly Batman fans going toward Gotham and watching Supergirl later. But I would expect Supergirl to be pulling in a bigger female audience just because it's a female lead show. And that was the whole idea. It was the whole point to it.
Yeah.
So whether they're comic book fans or superhero fans or anything else, it probably is secondary to the fact that, oh, hey, here's a girl and she's a superhero.
Yeah.
So... But yeah, you're right. It would be interesting to see just how those numbers break down. Because if Supergirl is pulling in a completely new audience, then there's an opportunity there for, you know.
And speaking of opportunities on Supergirl, I mean, we kind of glossed over, you know, with me gloating about how Martian Manhunter is out. But I mean, this does open a window because two things. First of all, Martian Manhunter is kind of the bringer together of heroes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This offers a lot of, obviously, potential. And since we've had comments where they're open to collaboration and stuff like that, you know, this could be really cool as far as, I'm not gonna say Justice League, but Justice League. The possibility of bringing them together in the television universe, some form of Justice League. And second of all, I have to apologize that I am not a current comic reader. Jacob, I believe you are.
Yes, I am.
New 52. What is John Jones's status?
John Jones is all over the place. Okay. They just finished Justice League United, and I believe now they have his own. He has his own series where he's trying to fit into the world after discovering a couple more Martians on Mars.
Okay.
And he did Stormwatch and Justice League America.
Yeah, New 52, he started out at Stormwatch
mm-hmm.
with the Spectre and... Was Deadman in that? It was all the...
No, it was...
I think it was all Wildstorm characters.
It was mostly the Wildstorm crew.
All right, so then he moved to Justice League, and now he's in Justice League United. But Kendall, to your point, though, I'm going to say... The possibility is there for Martian Manhunter to be used in that capacity in some way to bring hero type characters together until Justice League Dark goes in front of the cameras. Because if he's part of Justice League Dark, or if somehow they bring him into Justice League, then I'm fearful that Warner Brothers Pictures will do what they did with Deadshot. on Suicide Squad, and the TV version has to quote-unquote die, a comic book death, in order for the movie version to go unhindered. I don't know how they're going to handle two Flashes. That's the weird fly in the ointment in all of this. But for every other thing that they've been doing, Harley Quinn, Deadshot, who else? Well, Green Lantern. We haven't been able to get Hal Jordan on TV yet, despite however many winks and nods and nudges we've gotten.
Mm-hmm.
The producers have sat there and said, no, we can't. We know that DC Entertainment, Warner Brothers, they have frequent conversations with the TV showrunners, especially Berlanti and Kreisberg and Guggenheim. They've been very upfront and forthcoming about what kind of conversations they have and what the process is for getting permission for some of this stuff. They earn certain key characters that they can use for over and over from time to time. So I think
they unlock achievements.
Pretty much. Achievement unlocked. You get Green Lantern. I don't think we're going to get that. I think one of the reasons why we got Deadshot, we got Deadshot pulled from Arrow because he's in the Suicide Squad mission, and Will Smith is playing in there. I think for Martian Manhunter, if he ends up in the movies, we may see a switcheroo where Martian Manhunter Hank might get replaced by Cyborg Hank. Maybe that's when they do the reveal that Jeremiah Danvers is not dead, and they're all prisoners of Cyborg Hank run by Brainiac in Peru.
Dun, dun, dun.
Maybe. I don't know.
But the thing I have a question is that I'm looking at DC Comics, I'm looking at DC Entertainment as well, is complete. I don't think Diane Nelson would like to grab Martian Manhunter and put him on the big screen. I really don't think that's possible, because if they're trying to have the new 52 Justice League be the Justice League on the big screen, I don't think Martian Manhunter had a role to play in there.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's certainly not going to be part of the original seven that comes together, because we already know that it's going to be Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Flash. Those are five. And who else? They're talking about a
Black Are they putting Shazam?
Well, Shazam's going to get his own movie over at New Line Cinema. It's going to tie in with this continuity, but he's not going to be in Justice League. Cyborg.
Is Cyborg?
That's six. Black Canary would be seven if they put her in as a founding member, because she originally was.
Right, but they might probably... Yes.
No. Wonder Woman was originally the founder. They replaced her with Black Canary when they retconned it.
Right.
But
this, it'll be Wonder Woman.
Well, and I'm perfectly fine if they want to have Wonder Woman and Black Canary be founding members.
Oh, sure. You
could do it that way. You could still be okay with that.
They did successfully with Scarlet Witch and Black Widow in Age of Ultron.
Yeah. Well, you know what? They could actually give us, because, of course, it's Hawk Girl over on Legends of Tomorrow. They could give us Hawk Woman on the big screen and tie into the fairly popular and commonly known Justice League cartoon, which would actually be something that would...
She was known as Hawk Girl in that cartoon.
Oh, I know, but yes. I think you could definitely...
And she was an alien in that cartoon.
There are aliens in the DC universe. It's okay. So it's... I don't know. It's hard to tell. I know. Shocking.
Yeah.
Oh, they could go the Justice League of America route in the cinematic universe. If they do Martian Manhunter, the new 52 Justice League of America, they assemble a team, a Justice League, to stop the Justice League. That's what the
was
in the new 52.
Well, yeah, they had Simon Bass, Catwoman.
They had Martian Manhunter.
Stargirl.
Didn't they have a Justice League up in Canada at one point? Is that what Justice League United is, or was Justice League?
Yeah.
Where was Canada?
They were originally going to have Justice League Canada, but it became Justice League United.
Got it.
That's right. But Justice League America, you could have Martian Manhunter because he's supposed to take out Superman. Like, that's what they established in issue one of that comic book.
Oh, speaking of which. The other thing that was revealed, and we haven't even talked about this yet, Hank Henshaw sits there and says, there's only one other person on the planet who knows my secret. I mean, it's just one line. He just threw it out there, and everybody glossed over it because Twitter was just blown up on, it's John Jones. And nobody sat there and went, wait a minute, who else knows his secret?
Do you think we can get Miss Martian on the show?
No, I don't think so. Superman. Superman is the other person that knows the secret.
They'll save Miss Martian for the
Titans
series.
Yeah. Oh, now that would be fun.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
I like Megan. She's great. She's a little bubbly.
That could work. Of course, it's never going to happen, but it could work.
Oh, yeah.
It
works so well together.
Well, and I think there was so much that Young Justice got right that it's really, if you start pulling elements from it to put into the live action, it's just going to be, salt in the wound for everybody who's like, yeah, we didn't get any more Young Justice.
Curse you, Cartoon Network.
Well, but you know what? I think that if we start pushing towards getting a live action version of that, fans will probably be okay.
Yeah, but Batgirl.
Well, I know.
Batgirl's on that show.
I know, but you want to reach up and grab hold of various individuals and shake them till their heads fall off. But you can't do that because it's impolite.
What?
It's shaking. Yeah, do not shake people till their heads fall off. Kids at home.
You take all the fun out of everything.
Duly noted.
Okay, so
that makes me feel really bad about my Thursday then.
So
I don't want to get into details. But.
Well, speaking of shaking until your heads fall off, we've got Aunt Astra and the Kryptonians back
dun, dun, dun.
For the final confrontation of the season. Well, the winter finale is going to be all about Kara and the Kryptonians. I think we're going to finally see Non in this version of the story. And then it's off until February, March, like everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Taking the break. And we've got... Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
Supergirl's mid-season finale is the last one. And then we're in the wasteland, wandering... Was that a tumbleweed?
Oh, look. Legends of Tomorrow up in the distance.
That's right. Yes, that's right around the corner. Legends of Tomorrow starts January 21st.
Yes.
And that's going to be on, fortunately, a different night from Agent Carter.
Hmm.
So we can have our cake and eat it too, right? And for those of you who are following the Marvel Cinematic Universe with any degree of interest, we do have a podcast about that. It's called Level 117. You can find that over on iTunes or just go to scififorme.com and click on the podcast button there in the menu, and you can find that there. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk Arrow and The Flash. They had their mid-season finales. We're going to talk about The Trickster. And Damian Dark, and maybe the death of...
This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Whoa, where'd you get that shirt?
Bought it at the convention last week. It's an Atomic Cotton design.
Atomic Cotton?
Yep, they got t-shirt designs from sci-fi, horror, cult films. All the shirts were really unique and fun. I had to get one.
I gotta wait for another convention, though.
Nope, AtomicCotton.com. I ordered a shirt. Shipping was super fast.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at AtomicCotton.com. Atomic Cotton. Shirts and art for fans by fans.
Hi, this is Jason Hutt, editor-in-chief at scififorme.com, taking a moment to say thank you for listening to this podcast and to invite you to listen to our other podcasts. We have opinions on a lot of things, and we hope you join us both in listening to our thoughts and sharing your own. You can find it all by going to scififorme.com and clicking the podcast tab. Books, movies, TV, conventions, video games, comic books, the latest news, all in one place. scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
We wear our underwear on the inside of our clothes, just like Superman does now. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Back on the Rogues Gallery, Jason Hunt here in studio with Timothy Harvey.
Hi there.
And joining us by Ansible from Fort Worth, Texas, Mr. Jeff Hackworth.
Hello, hello.
And here in the Kansas City area, Jacob Ilyashar.
Hello.
And Kendall Sin.
Yo.
And we are talking about the DC Comics film and TV projects, and somebody, I don't remember who it was, it was either Kendall or Jacob. So somebody mentioned Diane Nelson. We were talking about, that would have been Jacob, I think. It was talking about Diane Nelson and the grab of whether or not John Jones would end up in the movies. I saw something the other day that talked about Diane Nelson's position within the hierarchy at Warner Brothers. And you remember we've talked about before the fact that once Kevin Sugihara came in as the top dog over at Warner Brothers Pictures, then all of a sudden this stuff started to move. It was just, I mean, automatically just one right after the other, right after the other. We're going to get a Man of Steel sequel, Wonder Woman and Aquaman and Flash. All of this stuff got announced just right off the bat whenever he took over and he did his first conference call with investors. I read somewhere Diane Nelson is reporting directly to him now, she's the vice president in charge of DC Entertainment, and she's reporting directly to Kevin Sugihara, who is, by all accounts, as far as I can tell, the one person directly responsible for Warner Brothers getting off the bench and moving forward on a cinematic universe for the DC Comics properties. I still don't know that Warner Brothers quite understands what they have a hold of, but when Sugihara says jump, they all jumped, and she reports directly to him. So I got to wonder if there's any creative synergy there, that maybe she's not as problematic a suit in this process as we might have originally thought. A speculation on my part, but whatever it was that I read had me question whether or not she's actually as much an obstacle to the process as we originally thought from her comments about Wonder Woman. Did you see all the internet stuff about David Goyer? Mm-mm. After the Martian Manhunter reveal?
No.
No. What was that about?
Oh, it was a lot of Goyer hate. Because you remember what he said about Martian Manhunter. And She-Hulk and all that stuff at the outset when he was doing some convention somewhere. And he was talking about, there was something about the fact that Martian Manhunter, I can't even remember what he said now, but it was something just stupid. And the internet blew up at him about how stupid it was. And this was right after he had gotten named as the creative force behind the DC Universe, right? Mm-hmm. After which he wasn't.
Yeah. Right.
Because this is the same convention where he said that the only reason She-Hulk existed was so she could have sex with her cousin Hulk. Mm-hmm. This is that David S. Goyer. And we know that Goyer is hit and miss on scripts.
Yeah.
But, a lot of people on Twitter is like, yeah, take that, Goyer.
So is he out?
I think so, because he was producing Constantine, and I haven't seen his name attached to anything else since. Was he doing Our Man for CW?
I don't think
he was. I don't know that he was, but I know he had Constantine, and then that was it. I don't think he's got anything else. I hope he doesn't have anything else.
Look, I like the guy. I don't mean to hate on the guy or anything like that. I think he did great work back in the Full Moon days, if any of you guys remember that, with Dangerous Toys. Demonic Toys. Toys was a hairband. But let's face it, as far as like the cinematic universe, he had his name on one great script. And I think that we can discredit his input there. It's kind of like, I feel like maybe on that script, Jonathan Nolan was the Lawrence Kasdan to his George Lucas.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
So I can, you know, again, no hate on the guy. I've seen plenty of interviews. He's a nice enough guy and everything. But he had Superman kill somebody, and then he did a bunch of interviews about how it was right. and I'm like, no, sir, no, I'm sorry. How are you and Jeff Johns in the same zip code?
Yeah, really.
Kids at home, do not twist people's necks.
Yeah,
it's
an extension of do not shake them till their head falls off. He's still producer on Da Vinci's Demons, which, as far as I'm aware, is coming back for another season. I have no idea.
Yeah, but that's not DC Comics.
But he's still, of course, producer for Krypton. If Krypton actually
happens.
Oh, that's
right. Yes,
he's
doing that one for
sci-fi. There's no date on Krypton, though.
I don't think there would be.
The thing is, I went to his Wikipedia page, and it said that he is writing Justice League Part 1 and Justice League Part 2.
Well, he may be...
Well, if that's a Wikipedia page, that may not law. Yeah, that may not be updated anytime recently. Because I honestly have not heard his name mentioned at all anywhere near DC.
He's not writing. If according to the Wikipedia page, he's not writing the screenplay.
He's doing story.
Yeah. And
which that's fine.
It's story. Meh.
Stories end up being broad stroke things when you grab hold of the screenplay and start figuring it out.
Well, and it could very well be, I mean, okay, there was a conversation at one point in which Zack Snyder sat there and went, what if Bruce Wayne gets a crate of kryptonite? And that becomes a major plot point. I mean, that becomes the beginning of this movie that we're getting.
Mm-hmm.
If that was the only thing that Zack Snyder had ever done with it, he would still get a story credit. That's how Hollywood works. That's this Inside Baseball Writers Guild stuff. He would still get a story credit. So whether or not Goyer's got a name, his name is attached, and if it says he's working on the story, that may not necessarily be that he's doing the heavy lifting on it.
Well, and we also have to bear in mind that for all the hate he gets, and justifiably so sometimes, he did write Dark City. He did write The First Blade. He did write Batman Begins.
He
did write Demonic Toys. And so, I mean, you can certainly look at some of the other stuff he's done and gone, yeah, okay. And listen to some of the things he said when he has opened his mouth and said entirely the wrong thing.
Which has happened frequently.
Well, but he also, you know, so it's like comic book fans and genre fans, we are... In fairness to people that produce stuff that make us angry, is that we care about the subject matter in a way that a lot of other viewers don't.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the kind of, you know, seething rage that a comic book fan can develop if you have you know, crapped all over their beloved property.
Right.
You know, there's a reason why Star Wars fans were angry over the prequels, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a reason why Man of Steel made people upset. There's a reason why, for as hugely popular as the Dark Knight movies were, there's a segment of Batman fans who are going, no. So you have to, you know, and Goyer doesn't always, he's good at saying the wrong thing sometimes, and that makes it even worse. And he, you know,
at least he's talking. You know, I mean, hey, whatever. You know, again, no hate on the guy. Great guy. It's just I would much rather he not sometimes crap on my childhood. But again, I'm mad at him because he's crapping on my childhood.
Of course.
I'm not. It's nothing necessarily against him as a writer, because whatever. Like, look, 3/4 of Man of Steel was awesome.
Agreed there.
Especially the first quarter. There's a few things that I look back on it now with not rosy colored glasses, and I'm like, yeah, that was, you know, Jor-El, you know, hanging around all the time. That was a little weird. That was a little dumb. There was one thing that I noticed when I was watching it. I mean, it's a very phallic movie.
Oh, yeah, visually, yes. There's
a kind of... In a way that made me not want to show... It was weird. It was just... But, again, not his fault, per se. But, I mean, look, if he's even partially responsible for any of that Martha and Jonathan Kent stuff, kudos. Because that was great stuff, in my opinion. I loved that stuff.
Except for the part where Jonathan walks into a tornado.
Now that was a little bit ridiculous, but as far as emotionally, I liked all the things they did there. Especially, and something that I kind of keep coming back to in that movie, something that no other movie I don't think had really touched on, that scene in the school when Diane Lane comes in to help him and stuff because he can hear everything.
Right.
That's something that we've never really seen in a Superman movie or anything like that. Just imagine how unnerving that would be. And I think that they played that really, really well. And I love that aspect of the movie. And if the whole movie, if they just hadn't destroyed half the planet.
Well, you know, Jason and I were talking about this, and a lot of what you're saying right there is an extension of one of my... In fact, I just went back and rewatched a good chunk of the movie about a week ago. The risk that DC Comics has made here with their cinematic universe, as opposed to what they're doing in the TV universe, is they have rooted it in the real world. They have rooted it in physics that we can recognize, not comic book physics. I mean, yes, you've got a flying man, but I mean in terms of how they interact with the rest of the world. And so you have those great scenes where you have a young man whose powers are emerging and it's overwhelming. But it means you also get destruction where you basically have two godlike beings going at each other. And then you apply physics. And then you sit there and realize, oh, that's going to total an entire city. And they do it over in the Marvel Universe too. But it's
like in the trailer for X-Men Apocalypse.
Well, yeah, for that or I mean, honestly, just if you watch the Avengers, you just ignore the funny bits and look at the level of destruction that is being happened and realize there's no way to evacuate the city in any reasonable amount of time. That's not how cities work.
Right.
So the difference is that we don't expect our comic book movies to have physics applied that way because it's kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
And so what you end up with is a film where we're looking right at that. And it's like, you don't want, and I think that's what upset a lot of people is that if you're going to go that quote unquote realistic, you end up with a bunch of dead bodies. And that's not necessarily what we were wanting out of our Superman movie. Okay. So it becomes this, you know, but you end up with those great moments like with Diane Lane in the school. And I'm one of those people who have maintained that the reason we got the Jonathan Kent we got is because if you look at how old Kevin Costner is and you realize that Jonathan Kent grew up through Vietnam and Watergate, and the space race and all that stuff, he's going to be paranoid about it. He's going to be paranoid about what the government's going to do to his kid. Not because he's paranoid of his government, but because he's a human being who's lived in America in the latter part of the 20th century.
Yeah.
And again, you're applying reality to something that doesn't really, you know, it gets weird when you apply reality to it. So I think it's a dangerous thing. It's a bold choice. It's also a real dangerous choice because people get upset about it.
Well, for justifiable reasons. We'll have to see how it plays out in Batman 5, because that's where the fallout, if there is any, that's where it's going to have to play out.
And especially with the new trailer, it looks like they really are going to play it with that fallout.
Looks like it, yeah. As well as some humor.
I know.
Yeah, and we awesome. Talked about that. We talked about it a little bit on H2O, and we talked about it on here on Rogues Gallery on an earlier episode, so you can go back in the archives and listen to that. Let's talk a little bit about Arrow and Flash. Because they had mid-season finales for both of those last week. I want to do Arrow first because I want to go back to Flash last because I have a proposal for Warner Brothers after we start talking about Flash. So let's talk about Arrow here for a second. We've got Damian Dark. Coming in, Oliver Queen has declared war, basically, and gone public saying, Damian Dark is the bad guy, boo hiss. And
otherwise known as, let's paint a large target on me and everybody I care about.
Exactly, which they confront Oliver about, and they say, Oliver, what are you doing?
I'm painting a large target on me and everyone I care about. Why?
He doesn't really, it doesn't seem like he actually gets that's what he's doing, but, you know, okay, it's a comic book show, so reasons, but Oliver's never really had very, very good judgment in long game planning, I don't think. He's very off-the-cuff, spur-of-the-moment type of guy, and it hit me, three, four episodes back. And I almost thought this could become a drinking game.
A drinking game?
A drinking game. Go back and watch any episode of Arrow.
Okay.
And count how many times Oliver Queen says it's complicated. Because he says it at least once every episode. It's complicated. It's complicated. It's complicated. And Stephen Amell says it the exact same way every single time. It's like,
could like, we add anybody. Things are complicated too?
Anytime he says the word complicated, yeah, it's complicated. Okay. Things are complicated. I can't tell you it's too complicated. He's always using that word. And it struck me the other day, I was like, this could be a drinking game. Every time Oliver says complicated, you drink. No, nobody would make it through an episode.
So at some point we are going to get an episode where he says that and someone suddenly goes, no, it's not. It's really not, Oliver.
I think Felicity's actually done that to him once already.
Oh, well. Yeah. Well, of course, yeah. She would.
Yeah.
And she may not ever get a chance to again.
Wait, are you saying something happened to Felicity?
Oliver finally realizes that when we were talking about long game planning, he goes up against Rachel Gould, he gets killed. Goes up against Damien Garg, Felicity. Sorry, guys, if you guys didn't watch it. Boop, Felicity might be R.I.P.
Okay, let's clarify a few things here. We're going to get into some spoiler territory. Yes, Oliver and Felicity were attacked by the shadows, the ghosts, not the shadows, the ghosts, at the end of the episode. Machine gun fire. Very Godfather-esque, you know, right?
Or Gotham-esque.
Except it wasn't slow motion. If it had been slow motion, it would have been straight out of Coppola. Or De Palma, right? So Oliver has proposed to Felicity at the Christmas party. She said yes. It's very sweet. Very sweet. And then Damien Dark shows up and kidnaps everybody that Oliver loves. And slams him through a wall. And he's testing some drug, some gas or something that can kill people, I guess.
Because we went right to Nazis. Because,
yeah, right. Sure, why not? And so Thea and Felicity and Diggle are in the gas chamber. And the scene where we saw Felicity going, Oliver, oh wait, wrong podcast.
Yeah.
that actually was not the way it played out in the show. We didn't actually hear her say anything.
Right.
We heard it in the promo, but not in the show itself. And rescue at the last minute by Black Canary and Green Arrow. When Oliver is standing there doing his,
I can't punch through the glass. I haven't been around 12 billion years. Yeah.
Different show.
But of course, Malcolm pulling in Alfred Pennyworth, dressing up as the Green Arrow.
Does anyone else just want a John Barrowman superhero show,
a
just
Merlin.
On his own.
Just Merlin?
Yeah, just a Merlin
spin-off. Sure, why not?
Didn't they have that?
He could be the mentor for Birds of Prey.
Oh, that would be excellent.
Along with Lady Shiva.
I'm all in favor of this.
Who would you get to play Lady Shiva?
Joan Chen.
She's a little old.
Kelly Hugh?
Oh, come on. You get Joan Chen in your TV show and you're going to complain about her being a little old?
Okay, it could work. It could work. But isn't she older than Barrowman?
She's an amazingly talented, incredibly strong, beautiful martial arts.
I'm not discounting that. I'm not discounting that.
Oh, I know exactly who. Wait, but you got to steal her from Marvel. Ming-Na Wen. She would rock.
Yeah, she could be a good Lady Shiva. I don't know. Joan Chen could work. Kelly Hu could work. Although Kelly Hu is already playing China White in the shows, so she couldn't really play two of the same thing. Rosalind Chow, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Lucy Liu.
Lucy Liu, yeah, she could do a few episodes, you know, in the off season of Elementary.
Sure. So we've got some candidates.
Sure.
All right. So okay. So Merlin and Lady Shiva mentor the Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
After we get Oracle, and it spins off. Oh wait, I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay. So so Oliver has said yes. They rescue everybody. We're all right. And at the end of the episode, they're in the limo and they're going off into Happy Land and
gunfire ensues. Right.
Right. Oliver manages to get the limo away. How he manages to do that without getting shot is comic book physics. And he gets
Star Wars stormtrooper physics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the ghost is, well,
They did kill the driver.
And they did hit.
By accident.
They did hit Felicity. Oliver pulls Felicity's body out from the back of the limo.
There's blood. She's motionless. She's
unconscious and motionless. And that's where we get the and the logo for the show. And of course, Twitter explodes.
And the teaser shows hallways of hospitals and rolling down. And
the graveyard, yeah, and the cemetery, mm-hmm, and yep, the headstone. And mm-hmm, everybody's like, no!
I gotta say this. I had to reassure my recap readers that Felicity was going to survive, because I told them about our conversations about your theory about Felicity as Oracle.
Well,
and how to come back here.
Here's a couple of reasons why I say that. And I've gotten a little bit of confirmation of a sort. Early on in this season, if you will recall, I think it was the first couple of episodes, somewhere in there, where Mr. Terrific's, what's his name, was part of the when they went to go rescue Ray.
Right, yeah.
Felicity called Diggle Spartan. He's like, Spartan? Really? That's what you're going to go with? And she's like, well, you've got to have a code name because there's somebody there who doesn't know who you are. And she said right there that she pointed out she was the only one that didn't have a code name. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's one.
Right.
Two, we look at what she does for the team, and by extension sometimes does for Team Flash. So that's two. Number three, she's just been shot. Number four, Mark Guggenheim, on his Tumblr, was directly asked, is Felicity ever going to get a code name? And if so, what's it going to be? And if so, when are we going to find out? And Guggenheim's answer was, yes, she's going to get a code name. It has the letter A in it. That's all he would reveal. And we're going to get it in episode 411. Now, for those of you who are keeping count, the mid-season finale was 409. Which means 410 is the episode coming back where she's in the hospital. 411 is going to be when she rolls into the Arrow Cave in her wheelchair and takes her spot as Oracle. I have been saying this from the first season, that Felicity Smoke, this version of Felicity Smoke, who is in no way, shape, or form anything like Felicity Smoke from the comic books, where she first showed up in Firestorm, this Felicity Smoke is going to be Oracle. She was always supposed to be Oracle. I have no doubt about that. And we're finally going to get it.
So basically what you're saying is that episode 11... we're going to have to listen to you do what Kendall did at the beginning of this show. Is that what you're telling us here?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I may have to do it over the course of three different podcasts.
Oh, I see. Great. Awesome.
Guys, yay. I got to also add that we also now knew in this episode that Damian Dark has a family. So he also has a weak spot.
Yes. Yes. So he's got a vulnerability.
Well, it does. It is. This Damian Dark is very much a Alan Rickman diehard comic book villain.
And that he's fun.
He is fun. I mean, it's like, I mean,
he seems like a Palpatine.
Oh, well, but he says Palpatine was never funny. But this is very much, when he looks at it, he goes, bad guy. I mean, that's just.
Oh, by the way, all your security guys out there, not alive anymore.
Yeah.
Don't worry about them.
Well, of course, you know, none of them were introduced. None of them had names. So immediately, you know, it's like, oh, you've brought in extra security. Oh, wow. Those guys are dead.
Mm-hmm.
How many of them were a week away from retirement? You know, that's what I want to know.
Yeah.
So it's just he's in the grand tradition of really threatening villains who have great senses of humor. Thank you, Neil McDonough. Welcome to the party.
Yeah. And you know, he chews the scenery up pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
You can tell he's having a good time.
Oh yeah, yes.
And,
he's one of my favorite villains, and I can figure because I'm also a huge Once as well. He reminds me so much of Robert Carlyle and Lana Perea and Rebecca Mader, because those three, if you watch Once Upon a Time, those three go at it by chewing scenery. So
yeah,
I gotta say he's one of the best villains I've seen. Yeah, DC,
but the villains over on Once, they don't seem to be having as much fun being villains. I mean,
not anymore.
And I gotta say, with Neil McDonough, I've gotta flip a coin. I don't know if I enjoy seeing him play Damien Dark more than I like seeing him play Dum Dum Duggan.
Well, okay,
he's clearly having a ball with both of them.
Well, but and both of them are very funny characters. I mean, they have a kind of humor just built into the character. The difference is that, you know, there's always, and as anybody who's, you know, ever done any acting will tell you, playing the bad guy is more fun.
Oh yeah.
Because you don't have the rules that you have to play the good guy. The good guys, you know, even the most flawed of heroes, even the most damaged of characters, doesn't, you know, they have some rules. That's how they're the good guy. Mm-hmm. The villain could just do whatever they want. And they can, you know, they can say whatever crazy thing and do whatever crazy thing. And if you give them any kind of depth, you get to really, you know, wallow in those depths if you want to. So he's definitely one of the more entertaining villains on TV right now. I think that the problem with a show like Once Upon a Time is that at this point, that show has been on the air for at least 2 years too many.
Yeah.
And the whole point of that show is now that no one can ever be happy. That's the whole message of Once Upon a Time at this point is...
Wait, that's The Walking Dead.
Well, yes. that's true
over there.
But the difference is that it's not... Walking Dead isn't done with Disney characters.
Yeah.
You talk about pandering to your childhood. It's like, here's your childhood,
and they're
all miserable.
I'm waiting for Dory and Nemo to show up, only they're going to be out of their bowl, flapping on the concrete.
There's a chance.
That's Once Upon a Time version of that.
Exactly. So so the difference is that over on Arrow, despite the fact, you know, you just had one of your most popular characters on the show, I mean, there's just no doubt about it, Felicity's hugely popular with the fan base,
yeah,
just got shot, and yet at the same time, your villain... is enjoying himself more than the villains over on Once Upon a Time. And there's a little bit of a glimmer of hope on Arrow that, you know, next season rolls around, some of the characters might be happy.
Maybe.
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 Yeah.
We do know that that Roy Harper is going to be back in some capacity in the back half of the season.
Right.
He's probably coming back... Oh, why? I mean, to make sure that Thea's okay after almost being killed again? Or, I don't know. But we also have that mystery there because when...
But do we really want Roy back?
He's pretty. I mean, he fits in with the CW crowd. I mean, right?
At this point right now, I'd rather care more about Felicity than Roy because actually TV Line did an article about the most polarizing characters and both Laurel and Felicity made the list. But guess who fans chose? They chose Felicity over Laurel as the most loved character if you put the two of them together.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I could see that for now.
Well, Roy is fine. The thing is that he's...
But now that Thea is Speedy, is Roy even necessary? Or does this open the door to Red Arrow. Arsenal?
Yeah, it's going to be that.
Well, see, the thing about it is, though, is
don't these people understand that I only have a limited amount of time?
It'll still be the same show. They'll just dole it out in pieces. But when the limo got shot up and Oliver pulled Felicity out, I immediately knew right then they're giving her Barbara Gordon's origin. She's got a bullet in the spine.
Well, okay.
Now, and it's an opportunity because if they put her in a wheelchair... Now, remember, Harrison Wells was in a wheelchair last season over on The Flash. And now he's not. And, you know, in this day and age when half of the universe on the internet is all griping and gritching about representation, then this is an opportunity for the show to put somebody in a wheelchair, somebody who's very popular, and put her through the process of coping and giving people with disabilities, not necessarily a role model, but, you know, somebody out there who can be there for them if they do it right. And, you know, all of this time when Barbara Gordon was Oracle, they did a lot of that. There was a lot of that because that was one of the complaints when they retconned her cure, when they brought her back as Batgirl. Everybody kicked up a fuss because now suddenly we don't have anybody with a disability in the DC Universe. This is an opportunity to correct that and do something like that on the TV shows, which we haven't had before. Because Harrison Wells was doing it as a lie. You know, he was the bad guy, he was the villain. But now you put Felicity in the wheelchair, and with her personality, you know she's going to turn it around and she's going to make the best of it, which is something positive to put out there on TV.
I think we did have the Oracle in Birds of Prey who was in a wheelchair.
Yeah, but nobody liked Birds of Prey, and that was back in the day when nobody was watching comic book shows.
Well,
it's completely different now in terms of the environment.
If you rolled Birds of Prey out now and changed nothing, you roll it exactly the same, I think the audience would be much more appreciative of it because they're willing to accept alternate versions of characters.
It would play better now.
It may not. There were some problems with some of the scripts, and it could have continued to fall apart on its own. But I think it came out at a time when there was not really an audience for it, in the way that there would be today. I don't know that I necessarily agree with you on this. I think that if she shows up in a wheelchair, and I have zero problem. This sounds terrible. I have zero problem with Felicity ending up needing to be in a wheelchair and becoming Oracle and basically the Barbara Gordon analog for the very simple fact that, yes, she would be a character who could serve as a positive disabled character in the DC multiverse. That sounds odd to me. But I
it sounds odd because you're disagreeing with me, or it sounds odd just coming out of your mouth thinking that it's Felicity doing that?
No, it sounds odd to me that we would be doing that to create that character. But I think that
I don't think that would be the primary motivation to do it. It's going to be a secondary.
Well, but I think to some degree it could certainly be the logical evolution of the character that we already kind of identify as Oracle.
Yeah, right? She's doing the job already.
Right. So on the other hand, I kind of suspect that what they will do is they will put her in a wheelchair for a little while. Not, you know, this is going to be permanent, or this is going to be, you know, it'll be a few episodes to establish. Mm-hmm. Because it's a CW. I don't know. I think it would be to some degree a pretty impressive way to go there. And I just don't think they're going to do it. I don't know.
Well, I think they've earned a certain amount of trust from the audience that they can afford to do it. From a creative standpoint,
now, sure,
you're right. Whether the network would sit there and do anything with it, that's another story. But I think the network is pretty much giving them a free hand.
Yeah, we'll see.
I don't know. Maybe. Okay, so speaking of The Flash, speaking of Harrison Wells, the walking around Harrison Wells from Earth 2, he got shot last week not in the mid-season finale, but the episode before that. And I want to talk for a second about Patty Spivot, because she plays a big role in this mid-season finale now. And there have been a few opportunities for everybody on the team to tell her what's going on. And they haven't. She is the Iris West of season 2.
I saw how well that worked out last season. Although Iris, it's funny though because they lampshaded that. Did you catch that? Because Iris comes in to Barry, and she says, "I get it. I understand why you were trying to keep that secret from me all this time because you thought you were protecting me. But now I'm having to do the same thing with Dad." Mm-hmm. You know that scene. And they basically lampshaded an entire season of lying to Iris with that one piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they turn it around and she goes, I can't do that. So they end up telling Joe about Wally, who in this version is going to be Iris's brother, not her nephew. And that'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because the dynamic is going to be so totally different between him and Barry now. And then you've got Patty now, who has shot Harrison Wells and almost killed him because she didn't know what was going on. And Caitlin looks at her and says, "Didn't Joe tell you? Like, you're supposed to know this stuff. You're supposed to be in on it." And of course,
Patty, I got to say, there is going to be consequences for Flash, for Barry, if he doesn't bring Patty in. It could be a relationship ruiner. Just look at Oliver and Laurel and look how mad Laurel was when her father and Oliver did not tell her that her father was working for Dark. So I have a feeling that Patty's not going to be too happy about all this.
Well, now, to be fair, though, Laurel, that whole chain there with Laurel and Oliver and Dad, I mean,
has been going on since season one.
Well, it's been going on since before that, because you know, Oliver has lied to Laurel since he took off on the boat with Sarah, at least as far back as that. So that's
consistency.
I'm not sure that there's a fair comparison there, but I do think that because Patty doesn't strike me as being the kind of character who's really got a chip on her shoulder outside of what's going on with the Martin brothers.
Oh yeah,
and that's survivor's guilt more than anything else. That's not. I don't think that's so much a revenge thing. For revenge's sake, that's Dad died instead of me, and I'm going to get the guy who did it.
Yeah, but she kind of went from zero to psychotic.
I know, she did. She did a little over the top.
Really weird.
I saw a little hint of Barbara Keene in her. I saw little hints.
Oh, good. That's just what the Flash needs. More Gotham.
Well, what surprised me, was in that final confrontation, I know we're skipping around in the episode, but in that final confrontation when Patty's got Weather Wizard down on the ground, and she's hit the Flash with the boot.
Mm.
And so he can't use his powers. I'm not quite sure exactly how that works. But he had an opportunity right there to stop her and tell her who he was.
Because
everybody else knows.
Well, at this point,
Martin knows.
At this point, you have to ask, is there a reason that Barry has a secret identity?
How secret? Let me ask you this, because this has been something that's kind of gone back and forth in the comics and in the animated stuff and all of the different versions of these characters. Barry seems to be the one out of all of them where it's not really that big a deal how many people know who he is. Because in the comic books, a lot of the rogues know that he's Barry, right?
Well, eventually they do, but it's not for a really, really long time.
It's not active.
Yeah, they don't figure it out for a while. Yeah.
You know, I mean,
the only people that knew that was Zoom, was Professor. Well, there was a Reverse Flash in comics, but now you have in CW that Captain Cold can surprise. That's in your apartment.
That was okay, fun when he showed up at the house.
But see, this is the kind of thing I like, actually. Yeah. What this show does well is that it gives you a Captain Cold who, like the comic, is ultimately, even though he's a criminal, there he has a code. He has a sense of honor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's funny.
Yeah.
You're out of the little marshmallows. I mean, come on. You know?
Yeah. Well, and I don't know that I could see anybody else playing that character right now.
No, he does it so well. Yeah. There's just no, there's it. If you were to have to recast for some reason, mm-hmm. it'd be like, eh.
Yeah.
All right, he's good, but he's no. Yeah.
I Wentworth Miller and Grant Gustin play off each other really, really well.
They do. Mm-hmm. They do. They've got a good vibe going there.
Yeah. Which is important, because if they continue along this route where they are incorporating so much of the mythology the way that they are, and you have to have a point where the rogues have to make a choice, where they're put in a position where they have to choose to be criminals or to stand with Barry.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to play right. It's not going to feel out of place that he would be the one to sit there and say, this is what we're going to do because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So,
and that's kind of what he does in this episode, yeah, to a point where he sits there and goes, yeah, they broke me out of Iron Heights, but I'm not feeling it as far right. as the plan to kill the Flash and all this other stuff. I mean, exploding dreidels and putting bombs in Christmas packages all over the city.
I had a little dreidel. I made it out of secret.
Oh, that was fun, though. He's in the warehouse that Joker built.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's doing the Joker voice. I mean, he's doing the Joker voice.
I actually saw complaints out in the internet that Mark Hamill's Trickster and his Joker are too much alike.
And there's complaints about that?
Apparently some people are bothered by this. And
well, at least he wasn't wearing a purple suit.
Bothered. That was just, you get to see.
It got me in the holiday spirit, man.
Absolutely. I got to say, Mark Hamill's Trickster was one of my favorite highlights of The Flash season 2 so far.
Well, and did you see the Easter egg from the original show? When they broke him out of Iron Heights,
mm-hmm.
James Jesse has on his wall all of those sketches, all of those Flash sketches and the cartoons and the witch and everything. Exactly the same thing he had in his cell in the 1990 series.
Wow.
Same kind of stuff. They said that's a wink to the old show.
Mm.
I'm still waiting for John Wesley Shipp to show up as Zoom.
That would be awesome.
See, I want there to be that alt. I want us to get an Earth 3, Earth 4, Earth something,
mm-hmm.
where John Wesley Shipp is the Flash.
Yeah.
And that, you know.
And that's the perfect entry point for my proposal.
Okay. All right, here we go.
And we'll end with this. Okay. So you've got all of these.
By the way, I told you we were getting Jesse Quick.
Yes. Jesse Quick is mm-hmm. Harrison Wells' daughter.
Right.
Yeah.
And we've got Velocity 6.
Mm-hmm.
You put the two of those together, and you're going to get Jesse Quick as another speedster.
That's true.
And Harrison Wells has made a deal with Zoom to fatten up Barry Allen with the Speed Force.
Which he will betray him with, nonetheless.
Of course. Yes. And he will, the idea is that Zoom will steal the Speed Force from Flash and then give Jesse back to Harrison Wells. That's the big reveal at the end of that episode.
I could definitely see the entire group, I told you so.
Yeah, Jay's probably going to get a moment to gloat after he finishes making a pass at Caitlin.
Caitlin lose her mind completely, and especially Barry as well. Especially after that thing that he said, I now forgive you for all your past actions.
Well, and we've got pictures of what looks like Barry Allen of Earth 2 in glasses and a bow tie, I think. We have pictures of the stunt person for Caitlin Snow's alter ego.
Mm-hmm.
Killer Frost on set up in Vancouver. So either we're going to get Caitlin Snow as Killer Frost on Earth 2, or something's going to happen and we get her on Earth 1. I think she's going to be an Earth 2 character.
I think so.
Speaking of Caitlin, don't you think she's moving a little fast with Jay?
Yeah. Ever since?
Ronnie hasn't been gone that long.
Well, Ronnie's been gone at least 6 months.
But Ronnie hasn't been gone that long.
But I gotta say, I looked at Robbie and Mel's thing on social media. There might be some kind of way that he's coming soon.
Yeah, he's returning soon. He's teasing a return, and so you know, and we've known from the very beginning that Ronnie's not dead.
The problem with,
well, he's coming to Dallas Fan Days in February.
Well, the problem with Jay and Caitlin is that really, what is Jay keeps wandering off?
Yeah.
And then he wanders back in, and then he wanders off, and then he wanders
maybe
back in.
Maybe he has a job.
What's he doing when he's not at Starlab?
Maybe Jay is Zoom.
I don't think Jay is Zoom.
No.
That would be too much of a twist on those characters. I don't think Jay is Zoom. I think Henry Allen, Earth 2 Henry Allen could be Zoom. Maybe not necessarily is Zoom, but that's my theory. But okay, so let's talk about the portals. The portals, there's 52 portals.
Uh-huh.
And in one of the early episodes, we got Professor Stein talking about a multiverse. But since then, I think we've established that all 52 of these portals lead to Earth 2, lead to some different place on Earth 2.
For now.
So they're contradicting themselves a little bit. But here's what I want to see. I want to see one of those portals open up and let Shaquille O'Neal come through as John Henry Irons. Because you could do that. You could do that. You could totally do that now.
Have him as Steel. As Steel. John
as
Irons.
Steel. Well, I mean, he could be either one. But you
I
can have.
To take a nap.
You.
No, absolutely not. That's a nightmare.
We sat and watched that the other day, James and I did.
On purpose?
And it's a fun movie. I mean, if you completely ignore the fact
and
that
Shaq has enough time,
he did okay. He did okay with what he had. Now, remember, you have to remember how many names are in this thing. I mean, Kenneth Johnson wrote and directed it. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that did the V miniseries, which is really good, the first one at least.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got Kenneth Johnson. You've got Annabelle Gish.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, Shaquille O'Neal did okay with what he had. Okay. But also consider the fact that this movie was made in the dark days before comic book movies were a thing, and it was made with the restriction that you couldn't say anything about any of the DC comic stuff.
Right.
So the only reference to Superman is the tattoo on Shaquille's arm. Everything else got stripped away. No Metropolis, no Lex Luthor, no Superman, no Kryptonite or anything like that.
But by your own argument, in a TV show which has yet to reference a certain person from Krypton.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because Steel didn't reference a certain person from Krypton.
So you want to perpetuate that.
Well, he could be in a universe that doesn't have Superman.
Okay, as the person...
And he just pops in.
As the one of us who is here in the room with him, if my mic suddenly goes quiet... Call for because this is how it's help me because if my mic goes completely silent, don't you touch that button. It's because he's snapped because I think he's leaning towards that way.
I think it would be fun for Shaquille O'Neal to show up as John Henry Irons. I just think it would. just because.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not against it. I'll stand with Jason on this one. I'm not against it.
There's enough time that's passed that the nostalgia factor would kick in, and all of us that are of an age, we'd sit there and go, oh, that's so cool!
Yeah, but you yourself have said that sometimes this is a bad idea.
Plus, Shaq has enough free time, like I said.
Okay.
I gotta say, this. I agree, this is a little bad idea, and you saw me going all crazy. We already have Supergirl set up in CBS. We don't need a Steel to come in to see Flash because I think we already have enough good quality.
I think,
on the other hand,
I think Steel would have worked better if they had been able to put it in the DC universe.
On
but
the other hand, here's where I will.
See, I've already got you. I've already got you leaning toward.
No,
they
you've got
introduce Kazam on Arrow.
Okay, I draw the line. Yeah. I draw the line.
Driving me absolutely bonkers.
Okay, I draw the line.
Yeah, we're not going to do Kazam. But, okay, so
here's how we could do this. I'm not saying they should. I'm saying this is how they could. We have already had everybody wants Supergirl to cross over. Okay.
Yes. And Yeah.
And eventually it's going to happen because these people are the people running the shows want it to happen. Mm-hmm. Right. So what you do is you introduce the character over on the Flash. You have him say cryptic things that imply that he's from a universe with Superman and Supergirl. And then you get your crossover episode where you've brought him back in, and then suddenly at the end of the two-part episode, the first half...
Then he shows up in the other one, other version.
And you end up with your Supergirl crossover.
I like it.
So this is how... Now, I'm not saying this should happen.
Make it happen, bro.
Don't listen to him. So,
when is the bubble going to burst according to my prediction?
You said 2 years. I don't think it's going to happen in 2 years. Because
they bring in steel.
Oh God!
But can you imagine? Can you imagine what the effects would look like now? If they were able to, because you got to remember too. I mean, we've been joking around about it, but Bastille was made back in the day when superhero movies were not a thing. And
right.
if you take the current approach to that character, like you do with any other character, no matter what the wildness of the premise, they'll make it work. Well, I mean, they put Red Tornado in an episode.
Okay, visually they'll make it work, but the problem they had with Steel then, and the problem you have with that character now, is that even if you don't go the Death of Superman route, okay,
which you can't do because they've got Cyborg Hank already. Well, that's
and I'm perfectly fine with them not going there because this could be a mess. It probably would be a mess, and you end up with all these spin-off characters that you don't. I mean, just complicates the world, but. If you have a John Henry Irons who's inspired by Superman, who the Steel, you can still play with that, or Supergirl for crying out loud, you could have Steel over on Supergirl where he's inspired by her, and that's a viable way to the best part about the character to me was always the fact that he was an ordinary man, very smart. Mm-hmm. was able to build a suit and all that stuff, but he's a normal human being who sits there and looks at a superhero and says, I'm going to be the best of that for other people too.
And we've got the entry point of that already in Cat Grant's speech this last episode, because Kara doesn't have her powers, mm-hmm. and everybody's like, well, where's Supergirl? She shows up every time a cat gets stuck in a tree. Where is she? That sentiment, and of course Maxwell Lord is sitting there going, we're going to learn to depend on her too much, and Kat's sitting there saying, we can't grow to depend on her, we have to depend on ourselves,
right?
Pull ourselves up by the bootstraps and whatnot. Who says that speech isn't the beginning point from some character like that? Maybe not necessarily John Henry Irons, but somebody like that.
Sure.
Who takes it upon themselves to go in and do that kind of thing. But yeah, John Henry Irons would be the perfect character to do that with.
Sure, and you could as long, because you don't have to have it be the Death of Superman. You can have it just be to be inspired,
mm-hmm.
to go and become a hero, because of that. So
he has been taught. He's been converted.
No, I haven't because if they recast it with someone other than Shaquille O'Neal, I'll be perfectly fine with that. I don't need it to be a direct continuation of the Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, but it's Berlanti. That would be so much in their wheelhouse to do that.
And if it's handled well,
that's the key.
If it's handled well, I will sit there and say, you were right. However,
it's not likely to happen. I know, but
I'm going to wait until it happens. Never. And then it will wait and see that if it never happens and it's handled right. And then I will say you were right.
All right. Well, let's do a listener poll. Send us an email or give us a call on the hotline. Let us know if you would like to see John Henry Irons in whatever way, shape, or form show up in the Berlanti-verse. We'll call it that. So area code 573-42-SCIFI. That's the hotline. You can leave a message. Now remember, when you call that number, it is a message number. So whenever it picks up and it goes through, you've got to leave a message so we can actually hear what you have to say. Or you can send us an email, roguesgallery@scififorme.com. You can leave us a comment on all the social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, and Tumblr. And you can also leave a comment over at our main site, which is scififorme.com. Don't forget, horrorforme.com, also now in play. And you can find the latest. We're taking baby steps over there. And in the meantime, we will wrap up this episode of the Rogues Gallery. We've got the mid-season finale of Supergirl just around the corner.
Can I interject one thing real quick about Flash?
Sure.
Could we petition CW to stop using the term "vibe me"? Every time Harrison Wells said, "Don't try to vibe me," I'm sorry, it doesn't work. It means something different, CW. It means something different. So let's get that petition going.
All right. That'll be the other thing that you could comment on, whether you want to see the show change that particular turn of phrase as well. Okay. All right. As always, I do appreciate everybody participating here. Kendall Sin.
Good night.
Jeff Hackworth.
See you later.
Jacob Elyashar.
Adios.
Tim Harvey.
Thanks for listening.
My name is Jason Hunt. Thanks very much, folks, for listening here on Sci-Fi From Me Radio. Don't forget, you can find all of the rest of our podcasts on iTunes and at scififorme.com. That's going to do it for us for this week. We will return with another episode of the Rogues Gallery soon.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.